This series of Kicking It Off is sponsored by Bazooka Goals, Airpitch, and 3v3 UK. Having been a coach for over three decades, I know how important it is to have equipment that's easy to use and immediately engages the players. Bazooka Goals is the award-winning pop-up goal that's the perfect partner for small-sided games and training. Remember, every dream starts with a goal. And if you want to take your games to the next level, Airpitch's unique system keeps the ball in play 95% of the time. And coaches, if you're like me and want to bring the best of football, futsal and street football together, then 3v3 UK hosts tournaments and festivals around the country, as well as having a great franchise program. It's all about fast feed fun. All three of these brands will help you create a fun-filled, vibrant environment in which to produce the happy, active, skillful players of the future.
And welcome to Kicking It Off, the podcast for those interested in sports, football, and the coaching of young children. Sad news, this is the last episode in the series.
No!
I know! And actually, we're going to be talking about a lot of stuff. So we've broken this down. So I told a little white lie. This is the penultimate episode in the series. We've got part one and part two of this episode where we're going to be talking about the coaching program that you will have developed over your season. So in a lot of our previous episodes, we've spoken about sessions as an isolated event when actually in a season, there may be 30 to 35 sessions potentially that you'll be delivering. So obviously as a coach, each one you've designed to reflect your approach, your philosophy and your priorities. So in effect, you've put together your own foundation phase coaching program, which is amazing. But we're going to be talking today about what if Carlsberg did a foundation phase program? We must say that there are other lagers available, but what might that look like? So today, we're going to be looking not at individual sessions as such, but more of a bird's eye view at your program and what you may have established and what you may have created over the season and what are some important things to consider. So as I mentioned, there's going to be lots to talk about. So we have broken this down into two parts where today, we're specifically going to be discussing child development, how to create a child-friendly pedagogy, and how to empower children, not just in your sessions, but in your overall program. So, Dad, number one is child development. That's teaching, learning, and football. So what things do you want to share on that point?
Yeah, if we take just a little one step back, this notion of instead of doing 30-odd sessions that don't really connect to the next one or the one before, it's not as powerful as having a vision and a collective vision that you've put together and decided on with the help of the children, the parents. So everybody has bought into the place that we're going to try to get to. I think that's much more powerful than saying, oh, we conceded a goal from a corner on Sunday. We need to work on corners this week. There's no real connection to the learning. And it's really important that for children of this age, or for any age really, that we make really strong connections and we draw on memories about, remember when this happened and this was our response and that was really good, but our response might need to change next time if we want to get better at this. So I think connecting the learning together is a very powerful tool right in front of the coach, but only if you accept it as that and don't ignore it and still look at isolated session plans.
So if a coach was reflecting back on the sessions that have been included or that they've included in their season so far, what things can they be looking for to find that through line potentially for next season? There's more continuity of learning and more consistency then.
So if at the beginning of the season you decided with the help of the children and their parents or anyone else that you felt was important enough to contribute, hopefully you'll have decided where you want to be. So if that is to, And it really centers around what kind of team do we want to be? Or when we play, what do we want it to look like? And I think once you've decided on that, if the children and yourself agree that we're going to try to play attacking football, you know, really aggressive, creative football, then that has to be mirrored and reflected in all of the sessions and the activities that you get the children to do. And in that way, you can always bring anything you do back to, remember when we said we wanted to be attacking and creative and stop the other team scoring. This is going to give us something that will add to that. So this is what we're going to practice. So I just think it's a bit like marketing, and you're selling the message, you're selling the vision, you're selling the end point for where we want to go. And hopefully it's been done in a way where everybody's felt part of it, can contribute, feels as though they can contribute to it, then it becomes much more powerful.
We've talked a lot about that, that open dialogue and the contribution that the children can have in their own learning. And if right at the beginning of a season, the children are able to decide how they would like to play, what they would all like to have collectively and individually achieved at the end of the season, what an empowering thing. Because it's common sense to me, or it feels best practice, that that is a shared conversation. That is an open conversation, because then you're learning what is important to the kids.
Yeah.
What do they want to achieve? What do they think they are capable of? And what do they think they are? Where am I at right now? And where do I want to be? Yeah. Because the more that we're asking and asking these probing questions, that's going to set us up really nicely for any future work.
Yeah. And I mean, we said this is a two-parter, with each part broken down into three bits. The three bits this time are about child development, teaching and learning. It's about an appropriate pedagogy. And then The last one is
empowering children.
The last one is, through that pedagogy, how empowering the children can really add value to what we're doing. So there's a lot of interconnected stuff. But if we start with the child, learning new things when you're very, very young can be really exciting and engaging, but it can also be quite difficult. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where it links to teaching and learning, because it's very powerful if you can connect learning back to something that's already happened. It's a form of consolidation, but it also asks the child to drag some information from last week, 2 weeks ago, into the present. And in doing that, we're hoping that that settles more deeply into their cognitive processes. So how you structure any kind of new learning is really important. And it could be that you introduce the learning in a really engaging and exciting way. And then we're looking for the children to try to demonstrate what that learning looks like, or what is it we're after? And can you show me what you think that might look like? Once you're at that stage, you can then say, oh, we need a lot more practice at this, or actually, most of the kids have got it. And some of them are already for the next bit. I can hold the others where they are, still keep them engaged, but I just need to push the others slightly further and make the challenge a little bit more appropriate. And then you're into managing children at different levels of their learning. But you can't do that unless you're aware of where all the children are at. And you'll only do that, or you'll begin to do that, when you look at how you're going to structure the learning that you want to take place within your sessions.
Because different children will learn different things at different rates. So, for example, if we're talking about your physical literacy, emotional literacy, your social literacy, some kids might be a lot further ahead in one of those things than others. But actually, if we've learned anything from these podcasts, hopefully, is that all of these different developments and all of the different categories within development in general are equally as important as one another. So that if one child, if when I say physical literacy, I mean that they're maybe faster, they're better technically on the ball, that they can just hold themselves physically better than some of their teammates, that is not the only component that should be focused on, that actually, are they able to interact with other children? Are they able to ask questions? Are they able to ask for support? Are they able to share? That if those things are missing, then that's an equally big challenge than a child who maybe isn't as comfortable physically on the ball. And both of those things, how do you as a coach balance children whose learning rates are so different?
I've had this in the past, and because we had a really clear idea of what kind of team we wanted to be, it wasn't just technically and playing attacking football. It was about what about if somebody's having a bad game or somebody makes a mistake, how do we all react to that? And if somebody needs our support, what kind of things do we say? And this is both in training and in matches. And so we almost build something that everybody can contribute to. And I remember having or working with a young boy who technically and physically wasn't the same as the others, but he was the kindest, he was the best teammate you could ever ask for. And I was able to work with him on his self-esteem and on his confidence. So he felt a really strong part of this team because we'd all decided these are the kind of qualities we want as a team and for a teammate, and we discuss them and we lived and breathed by them.
And you place value in that.
Absolutely. And so I was able to say, you know, that's a really kindest thing to do. Or if ever I'm in trouble, I know who I'm going to go to. And suddenly you bring in them into what you're trying to create. So the message for coaches is, yes, obviously get the technical stuff right, but you're absolutely right, Lauren. What surrounds it is probably more valuable for the child's development than the football bits. Yeah. So we have to make sure that we get that right.
And we've said this time and time again, it's child first, football second, that actually you would hope that in years to come, when these children who have been working with captains of play or foundation phase coaches or coaches grassroots anywhere, that when they reflect back on their time doing football, that it's been enjoyable. They've had fun. They felt looked after. They didn't feel exploited in any way, or that actually if they weren't necessarily good at this, they weren't considered or they weren't as valued or important. Yeah. And that it has to be child first.
Yeah, that thing about everybody is of equal value. Your contributions might be slightly different or made in slightly different ways, but the value of everyone to what we're trying to achieve collectively is just absolutely crucial. I think from a child development point of view, it's not that we want you to become a paediatrician or an expert in child development, but if you understand, certainly working at the very young end of the spectrum, that some children find it difficult to judge the speed of moving objects. Well, in football, if the ball's fizzing around and you need to arrive at a certain point at a given time and you're not good at judging the speeds, then you might get that wrong. But it's not a mistake. It's just where the child is at developmentally. Also, if you're looking at visual acuity and depth perception, children are not great at picking out the most important information from a whole mass of information if they look up on a football field. They might not be great at saying, oh, there's my teammates and there's another one and there's a defender. That will improve quite quickly over the years. But we just have to cut them a little bit of slack. And if we're saying get your head up and all of these things, we need to find out what things they are attending to and looking at and focusing on and what things are beginning to influence the decisions that they make. Because until that visual ability is fully developed, they might not be searching the information-rich areas that are going to help them make those really good decisions. And so we don't have to become experts, but we have to try to understand the world of the child and be a little bit more forgiving and supportive, knowing that you're going to come through this. So why am I battering you with this now?
And so are there any books or any articles, any useful pieces of information on your journey of learning more about child development that you think would be good to share with the listeners?
Yeah, I think any of the books to do with early years education are really good, because they'll also include a lot of information around play and the importance of play. And I know we tend to mention this in every podcast, but this is where we want the coaches to recognize where everything is just, it's entangled. It's all interconnected.
You can't separate them, can you?
No. And you might be a coach who's great at the technical bit and, you know, has got a great attitude. But if you've got real deficiencies in the other areas, the kids are not getting the best from you. I'm happy to look at some titles that we can put.
We can attach them to the website.
We can attach them to the website. And also a lot of the play phase content that's also on the website. I've actually looked at the research, looked at the literature and tried to take out the best bits and then make it appropriate for you as a football coach. So I've tried to do all the hard work for you, and you'll find that on our play phase resource.
So all of this that we've just been talking about, does this come under the umbrella of a child-friendly pedagogy? And when I first heard that word, I had no idea what it meant. So could you just explain what it is? And is the stuff that we've been talking about, does it fall underneath that term?
Absolutely. I think if you're working with children, you need to know a little bit about children. If you're working with teenagers, you need to understand, because the teenage brain is, again, a completely different thing. So the more we know, the more we can understand who's in front of us. But pedagogy is just, it's just an approach to teaching and learning. And it comes from a Greek word that really captures the vision of somebody leading someone by the hand to a place of learning. And I think that's all we do, because I think the one important thing we have to remember, and I can't emphasize this enough, is that learning doesn't just take place when you tell a young child what to do. That learning takes place in lots and lots of different places and in lots and lots of different ways. So having a child-friendly pedagogy or approach to teaching and learning means that you will actively embrace helping the children to explore and experiment with their ideas and with their ways of exploring the game of football. And I think the more that you embrace that, the better fit that pedagogy and that approach to teaching and learning is for the children.
So hopefully all of this information will influence coaches how to maybe make tweaks to their sessions or reflect on their overall coaching program and go, okay, yeah, I'm touching on these corners, or maybe I need to, yes, I possibly need to get better at this corner and this corner. But before a coach then goes to deliver and for this information to land with the children, I suppose so much of that is making sure that the environment that they create for the session, before the session has even begun, is just as important as the information that they're going to then deliver.
Absolutely. And children, well, we all, when we're learning something new or we're in different environments, we need to feel emotionally and psychologically safe. And if we don't, that can affect any messages, any learning, any information going into that important part of the brain so that it stays there and becomes part of us. So that psychological safety is not just saying, oh, the goals are weighted down, or there's no, you know, bricks or broken glass on the pitch. It's actually having an approach that the children feel, if I fail, it's okay. I'm still going to get the coach's support. There is almost, well, there is unconditional support because of what you're all trying to work to together. And I think that's a really special place to be for both you, because it will be so much more enjoyable for you. And that's important. But it's also going to be a great place that the children, I believe, will want to come back to week after week after week.
And so getting everybody on board and having everybody's voices thrown out there. Dora agrees. I am sat downwind of her though, and she has just let one off. Dora the golden doodle, she's here in the studio just snoozing away and letting off some right stinkers. But anyway, if everybody is involved and everybody's voice is thrown out there, that feels like that links into point number three of empowering children and how important that is, that knowing where everybody's at, how they're feeling, have you had a nice day, that those check-ins and, yeah, just creating a system that everybody is proud of and everybody is working for, rather than it just being dictated to you, I think is really important. So how else can we go about empowering our young children?
Well, just as an aside, the rights of the children or the rights of the child are written in the UNHCR articles, and they are not things to say, oh yeah, I'm aware of that. They are things that we should actively bring to any interaction with children. They are that powerful. And one of them is that their voice should be heard or needs to be heard. So actually including the children into what happens in the sessions, what kind of team you want to be, how do we want to play, how do we want to treat each other, how do we behave when we lose? All of that is a great way of bringing the children into the process, listening to their views, helping them think critically about those really important times that are in competitive environments, they're going to crop up. So don't try to act in the moment. Have it set in stone about this is what, how we want to behave, this is what we want to be like. And I think if we get that right, then certainly we're working towards the rights of the child. They've also got, this is a really important one, and I don't know whether the coaches out there know it, but they have a right to play. So if we're having large squads where you know every weekend children won't be playing, I'm not saying you'll be taken to the, you know, the European Court of, of Justice, but just bear in mind that it is a right for children to play.
Yeah.
I interpret that, rightly or wrongly, that if someone chooses football and they choose my team, they need to play.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important thing to remember. But it's a great place to start if we say, do you know what, whatever we're going to create, let's do it for the children and with the children.
Yeah, I think to me, that makes sense. That's common sense and it's best practice. So then if we're putting that, if we're framing that again for a coach either reflecting on or looking to the future at their coaching program, is there anything else maybe at the beginning or during or at the end of their session that are exercises specific to giving children a voice and a choice? And again, just reinforcing that message of we are empowering you and your voice and what you have to say is important.
If I know a coach who's adopted this approach, and like all of us, we're still practicing, we're still trying to get better at it. And he talks about mistakes, because he felt it was important for him that in order to create that psychologically safe place, that we had to reframe mistakes. And rather than just have a throwaway remark to say, do you know what, mistakes don't matter, they actually do matter, because if you want to learn anything effectively, you have to learn from the little mistakes you make and the little blunders that are obviously going to accompany learning something new. So he actually made mistakes our friends, because he would actively say, is this hard enough? Are we making enough mistakes to be learning something new? So he was really trying to get the challenge point right. And one way was to gauge whether the children felt that they were making enough mistakes. And
they
didn't become the enemy. They actually said, it's a really good way of saying, is this hard enough? Are we trying to get the challenge right? And if it's too easy and we're not making any mistakes, we're not really learning anything new. Now, you can have periods where there are few mistakes because you're consolidating some previous learning. But if we want to continue the learning of the children, we just need to keep nudging that equalizer up and down for each child and hopefully for the group, so that the challenge point is pretty much always where we want it to be.
I think that's so brilliant to reframe what a mistake is and our relationship to a mistake. Because me personally, I hate making mistakes to the point that I might not practice, say, the piano. I'm so terrified about how it will sound if I make a mistake when I'm practicing a new piece that I then actively avoid practicing.
Yeah.
But then for me, that has just reinforced that I'm just stuck in the same place constantly, because the less I practice, the more mistakes I'm going to make. And the more mistakes I'm making means I want to put off practicing.
Yeah.
But actually, if that had been reframed for me in a way, and if I was exposed to this idea and then was able to take it on board, what a brilliant, brilliant reframing of something that can be quite scary, yeah. I suppose.
And I think Gareth did the same with the England team, where penalty shootouts became our nemesis. Yeah. And it became such a dark shadow. It's no wonder the players used to freeze or not bring their personality or their true ability to those penalty shootouts. And I'm sure he reframed it, that it was a really exciting thing to be involved in. And so if you change the perspective, then hopefully you're going to get more buy-in and more engagement. And when those situations come up, you view them differently. And so your response is very, very different.
And I'm taking this from, I was lucky enough to see Dear England, the play that was produced by the National Theatre. For listeners, as well as doing podcasting things, I am also an actor, so forgive the little theatre detour. But I watched this play, and it was all about Gareth Southgate's time as England manager. And so much was about the penalty shootouts and their attitude and approach to this really terrifying part of a football game. Even just thinking about it actually just kind of makes me feel a little bit sick.
Me too.
But one of the characters, obviously all of this is based on real people, was Pippa Grange, the lady who was the sports psychologist and head of people and team development during, I think it was from 2017 to 2019. And she was obviously brought on by Gareth Southgate, and obviously been fictionalised for the theatre. But her thinking was, we have to just tackle this head on, and we need to change our relationship with how this feels, how the walk to the ball, how we approach the ball, how that feels. We need to practice that, and we need to rewrite how it feels in our DNA, because otherwise we're just constantly going to be deer in the headlights and terrified. And there was a really interesting statistic in the play that she'd gone through lots of other European teams, international teams, and timed how long that walk from the ball to actually taking the shot was. And ours was so small, the time that we took, we stomped up there and shot, because it almost,
we wanted to get it over with.
Where so many other teams took their time, figured out what it was that they wanted to do, and were ready to kick that ball.
Yeah.
Whereas it felt like for a really long time, our English approach to taking the dreaded penalty was,
let's get it over with.
Which I do understand, because honestly, really thinking about it now, I just have that pit in my stomach and go, oh gosh, I really hope we don't have to go through that.
Yeah.
But it was, a lot of it was about fear, and you just have to go head on with it. Mm. And actually, if children and their relationship with mistakes and any fears that they might have about mistakes are addressed when they're really young, in this really amazing time, that they're going to move forward as adults who are less fearful of the unknown, less fearful of mistakes. And obviously, you know, we're wanting them to go down and continue working with us in football. You're going to have players who are really confident, and make sure that they're ready. There's a lot to be said for being ready.
You'd like to think so. And I know we've spoken earlier about teaching and learning. We want children to be excited by learning. And it shouldn't be something, oh, we do it at school and it's boring. It's when I go to football, we learn loads of stuff because it's engaging. The coach asks us, we can bring our ideas. He's willing to go with what we suggest. And they include a load of informal play, and we're just playing. But the coach knows, actually, there's a lot of learning going on because you're playing a game that I've carefully structured. And this is where this notion of a thing called deliberate play comes in. And for me, it's the perfect combination between structure and those organized coaching sessions and the kids just free playing.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that they can free play with very little input from the coach and very little, you know, constant feedback from the coach. They can play, but in a carefully crafted game that is going to provide all the challenges, all the obstacles, all the demands of the game that the children can overcome, but almost in a free play environment.
So, Dad, I just want you to pause that thought, because actually next week, when we'll be continuing this conversation, we're going to be discussing the power of play.
Yes.
We've got another three things that we're going to be talking about. One, the power of play. Then how we can develop foundation phase specialists and what might we need to do to achieve that. And then also the importance of providing both competitive and recreational opportunities. So thank you so much for listening to this episode. Please do join us next week, where we're going to be continuing this conversation. But from me and Dad, thank you very much. And from Smelly Dora on the floor over there, she says goodbye. Thanks for listening, and we shall see you next week.
Thanks again to our sponsors, Bazooka Goals, Airpitch and 3v3 UK, for helping us to create the perfect environment to develop happy, active and skillful players.